Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
A big surprise for me was the fact that Morocco is so integrated with the rest of the continent.
Daniel Whitley, administrator of the Foreign Ag Service.
We had a chance to visit a number of educational institutes, the Milling Institute and the Bakeries Institute, and they were hosting students from all over the continent. There were students there from Rwanda and Uganda, as well as Cote d'Ivoire, learning the latest technologies in milling agriculture and what the latest technologies are in bakeries. So it's clear that they have a very influential role on the continent, not just in North Africa, and it is prime for American agriculture to deepen and strengthen the partnership. They appreciate a lot of the products they get from the United States, including feed as well as other processed products. They appreciate the two-way trade relationship, and they look forward to strengthening those relationships moving forward.
This is Agriculture Today.
How do you fix things if you're not willing to tell the truth?
Arizona Representative David Schweiker.
Think about what a crap place this was last week. We had people come to the floor here and spend $200 billion without offsetting it. They go, but I had constituents that wanted this money. Great. Find a way to pay for it. In our own, we added earmarks again. We chose not to prioritize a debt and deficit commission because those things would be hard. So you get up in front of a room and say every dime of debt for the next 30 years is demographics. And as soon as I say it, you can actually see people running for the exits. Because if you don't know it, you don't have to go tell the truth to your constituents. But it's math. It's not Republican, it's not Democrat, it's demographics. This is Medicare. This is Social Security in 9 years when the trust fund's gone. But this is the rest of government. This is the CBO score on baseline right now, without, you know, where the taxes are going up next year, where there's no wars, no recessions, no pandemics. This is the baseline. And they still functionally have us at $115 trillion of debt. Do any of you have kids? Do any of you have grandkids? Do you like them? Is it moral that I have a 2.5-year-old? And yeah, I think that's moral. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened. I have a 9-year-old also. They're same birth mother. My wife and I it's the greatest thing that ever happened to us to be able to adopt these kids. How do I explain to that 2-year-old when he hits 21, 22 years old, baseline says the United States has to double every single tax, every excise tax, every corporate tax, everything, just to hold current services. And that our kids will be the first generation in American history to be poor. This is the morality of this place. And it doesn't have to be that way. There are incredible solutions to disrupt the cost of government. And for a bunch of the members here, it almost seems easier for them to go cut something or raise a tax than actually pass pieces of legislation saying we're going to adopt technology to crash the price of government. Even though it would be moral, you could make people healthier, you could make, you know, the air quality cleaner, and you just change the way the current bureaucratic model. Because we all walk around with these supercomputers. You do realize this is part of the solution. If anyone's listening, if you know, the 4 or 5 people that may give a damn enough to watch this, environmental crowdsourcing YouTube Schweikert. I have a little YouTube video. It's 90 seconds. I did 7, 8 years ago. I've been trying to do that as a piece of legislation that says, why don't we just crowdsource air quality? You could wipe out the bureaucracy. You could make it like this. You get a building permit. But if you screw up, we catch you instantly. It would be really good for the environment and really pro-growth and wipe out the absurdity that shoving paper in file cabinets makes the air cleaner. It's basically documentation for the trial lawyers. You think I could ever get a hearing here? Because it's creative, it's disruptive, and the air quality engineers are going to come lobby against it. How about the ginormous drone that flies the pipeline path? So we all have this conversation over and over. We need permitting reform. Great, let's do permitting reform. But you got to change the inputs on how you do your NEPA, your environmental studies. And what happens if you could have that ginormous drone? You put ground-penetrating LIDAR under it and runs back and forth over the pipeline path or the power line path. And it does your archaeologicals. It does your soil. It does your plant inventory. Technology, you could get much of your NEPA report written in 6 days by AI. That's thinking disruptively.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, as we look across the dairy industry across the United States, we continue to see the number of farms decreasing, and actually decreasing at a fairly rapid rate the last few years.
Dr. Mike Brook is a Kansas State University dairy specialist.
That will likely continue, as well as we've seen an increase in the number of dairy cows per herd. And as we crossed over the 350 cows per herd average for 2023, we'll see that likely grow again in 2024 as we see some other large producers begin production on some units across the United States, as well as loss of some of our smaller farms across the United States as well. Also, we've been seeing a fairly rapid increase in the amount of milk that we get from each of our dairy cows, and that will continue to increase and grow as that adds to our total milk production. So that's how it looks on a national basis. How does it look here in the central order? And as we look at that, many of our states have seen decreases in the number of dairy herds, and Kansas is no stranger to that. We continue to lose dairy herds every year. However, when we look at the total number of cows in the state, that continues to grow. So how does that compare to some of our neighbors? Well, our decrease in dairy herds has been a little bit less than maybe what some of our neighbors have experienced. So as you look to Missouri, or you look upward to Iowa in terms of number of losses of dairy herds in their states, they've had a much sharper drop than we have. As we look at average number of cows per herd, some interesting things there. Here in Kansas, obviously, we're growing in the number of cows per herd. So our trend here in Kansas is a decrease in the number of herds, but increase in the number of dairy cows per herd. As we look at milk production per cow, that's an area where Kansas also has seen some increases over the last 10 to 15 years. As you look next door to our friends in Missouri, they've been fairly stable in production per cow. So when you think about that, the number of cows per farm not changing very much in Missouri and the production per cow not changing much, you can see that the milk flow off the farm would not have changed greatly as compared to a state like Kansas, where we have a growing number of cows per herd as well as a growing amount of milk harvested per cow each year. So how does this all relate to your dairy farm? Well, I think it's important that you keep track of the trends in the industry. As we see that more farms are shipping more milk off their farm, whether that be through an increase in the number of cows and or an increase in the milk production per cow, it is an increase in the revenue that they're taking in. So if we're not going to expand our herd, or if we're not going to seek ways to increase milk production per cow, the other thing we would have to focus on is trying to cut expenses. Well, there's generally a limit to that, and many times we're not very successful in the financial arena when we just simply focus on cutting expenses. So you might look at other things that you might be able to export from your farm other than milk if you're not going to be changing the number of cows or trying to increase milk production on your farm. You might look at things like ag tourism or other ways you can market your milk other than just into the raw fluid milk stream, as that will limit your income.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Went into the CoBank data, calculated some fairly standard financial ratios to look and compare and contrast how things have changed over time.
Kansas State Ag economist Brian Brigeman speaking at the 2024 Midwest Ag Conference in Chicago.
So looking at southern plains states of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas versus a select few Corn Belt, I states of Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. So from a profitability standpoint, looking from 2019 to 2023, you can really see the effects of weather. In Kansas, we have had two, if not three, consecutive wheat crops that have been completely lost throughout the state. That adds up, and it has an effect on the farmer cooperative as well. So when we look at return on equity from 19 to 23, going from 9.6% down to 1.1%, that creates some challenges. But conversely, looking at the I states, we haven't seen, yes, water issues are present. Derecho, you know, affected, came in there. But we just, you know, haven't seen a lot of that. Actually, we've seen some of the big increase, rather, if we look at the ROE for those Corn Belt I states. If we look at a debt service coverage ratio, very big decrease for many of these Southern Plains cooperatives, you know, even going into negative territory. You're going to see here in a little bit, a lot of that is emphasized by the lack of cash flow. Operating cash flow in particular had a really big significant hit, especially when you go into a debt service coverage ratio calculation. But on the I states, we see it being fairly stable, actually, you know, holding from a debt service coverage standpoint. Liquidity, and here to try to account for size, do this division, you know, working capital to total sales. In Southern Plains, we see it being relatively flat, where in the I states, it actually went down. So if we look for in the Southern Plains states at holding, basically that is just hold on, right? With the profitability downtrends and things that are going on, the discussions that I have a lot with boards in this particular area is, well, what is that working capital made of? Have you properly counted for the shrink in your grain inventory? How are you on your ARs? Where are you up to date on that? One thing on the AR list, we haven't seen in the data bad, those uncollectible ARs increase significantly yet. But that is the data, most recent data I have is for 2023. My guess is when I get the 2024 data, we'll start to see an uptick in that. On the I states, well, actually, I don't have this in here, but a big reason why you see that draw down is investment in property, plant, equipment, net fixed assets. So using that working capital in order to invest, you see more of that going on there. And then finally, just to look at debt usage. And again, just to try to put it in some sort of scale to take total debt divided by EBITDA, we see it really shoot up within the Southern Plains. And a lot of that is driven by the lack of cash flow. So EBITDA is dropping pretty significantly. And then conversely, looking at those Corn Belt I states, pretty much holding fairly flat. So this financial strength, you know, weather has a big impact on it, and it has implications for the ag input markets. Probably most notably is AR risk. So thinking about accounts receivable, you know, like I said earlier, we haven't seen in the data an increase in those uncollectibles, those late accounts more than 90 days. But this is a trade credit, right? So this is something that farmers will start to utilize, right? And how much they want to stretch that, you know, will we see them stretch it out beyond, you know, that 120 days?
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We were very excited to see this bill move forward.
Kent Backus, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on passage of H.R. 5863, Federal Disaster Tax Relief Act.
Congressman Greg Stubbe from Florida has taken the lead on this. And this was part of a larger tax package that kind of stalled. And Congressman Stubbe took the initiative and moved this on its own. And this is really important because this bill kind of it rights a lot of wrongs when it comes to people who have suffered from natural disasters and have had to pay income tax on those disaster relief payments they've received. So this this extends some of that coverage to, you know, people who have been victims of hurricanes over the last few years, but it also extends that relief to people who've suffered from wildfires. And so for those federally declared disasters, this means that that those disaster payments are not going to be treated as a taxable income. So this is a very important thing. This is something NCBA has been strongly supportive. You know, we were hopeful that we would see something by the end of the year. And lo and behold, in the middle of the week, the Senate decided to approve this on a voice vote. So there was strong bipartisan support in both houses.
He admits it's needed right now.
We need to get this relief out to folks who've been affected by it. And you look obviously in the southeastern United States, you've had a lot of catastrophes with hurricanes. But when you look out west, just the years of catastrophic wildfires we've had everywhere, and you know the impact that's had, and the long-term droughts we've had, and floods, and all of these other federally declared disasters, people need that relief. They need to be able to, rebuild and recover.
It's not the only thing needed right now. Martin Brown with Plains Cotton Growers.
There are several things that agriculture is looking for to be able to get out of this lame duck session. And we know that things are winding down very quickly before they take their Christmas break. We know that there's a hard and fast deadline coming up of December the 20th, in which there will have to be a budget reconciliation package that will be passed. And so that is certainly something that will have to be done. Also, we fully expect another extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. Unfortunately, we did not see this Congress complete a Farm Bill, which had been completed in the House Ag Committee, but not in the full House. And it was also never discussed by a full committee in the Senate. So we're hoping for an extension of this Farm Bill. There could be a possibility of some adjustments on this bill where it would be called an extension plus. However, that is not a certainty. And then also, we are fully anticipating and expecting some type of disaster aid for agriculture, as well as for the people that have suffered so many natural disasters in the country. And so we hope and expect to see that in this lame duck session. And I would say, to wrap that discussion up, it certainly would not hurt to continue to contact your congressman and stay in touch with them and tell them of the desperate need that we have to get some legislation passed that would help get producers over this hump and be able to make it easier for them to apply for operating loans in January of 25.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We have had a little bit of freezing weather, but not much.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
And of course, back in August, most of our Plains Cotton Growers service area droughted out. And we had extremely hot conditions, and of course that just really did a lot of damage to the cotton crop that was trying to set fruit at the time. Then we rocked along with pretty open weather for several months. We got into November, and Tony, as far as what we've had in the way of rainfall during the month of November, anywhere of reports from 2 inches all the way to 10 inches. And of course, when you get up in that 9 or 10 inch range, you're talking about half of our annual average rainfall that occurred in 1 month. And so we have really dealt with some wet conditions during the cotton harvest, and that's been unusual as compared to the last few years. And we all know that even though that causes a lot of difficulty during harvest, we know better than to turn a rain down in West Texas, because we know that it will benefit us next year. And I would say that a lot of those rains fell very nicely, and we feel that in a lot of the area that we got some good infiltration into the subsoil profile, so that moisture should still be around there for next year, for the most part. So that's a good thing. As I mentioned, we've had a few freezes, but believe it or not, I'm hearing reports across our area of cotton that is not dried completely down. Problems with mushy green bolls in the top of the plant, and whenever I get off the edge of the cap rock, there are still a lot of green cotton out there. And because of our poor yields in many areas, and because of the economic situation, some producers have either chosen not to use harvest aids and to wait on a freeze, or have used harvest aids and the cotton was kind of hardened off and they didn't get a really good kill. So tonight we are projected to have a good hard freeze in the Lubbock area, and so hopefully that will be the freeze that puts the final nail in the coffin for the 2024 cotton crop, and we'll be able to get this dried down and get the remaining fields into the module.
USDA projecting a 58% year-over-year increase in Pima cotton nationwide. In Texas, it's up over 326% in the past 3 years.
In terms of Pima cotton, we do have a lot of ELS cotton in our area, And we actually now have two gens in the Plains Cotton Grower Service Area that have the capability of ginning ELS cotton. And it's interesting, and I might mention those two gens while I'm at it. One of those gens is located in Brownfield, and the other gen is located in southern Bailey County in a little community called Maple. And so those are the two roller gins in our particular area. And it's interesting that because of the calibration differences in ELS cotton versus upland cotton, those samples have to be classed out in Visalia, California. So it's a matter of boxing up those samples and sending them out to Visalia. But I understand that they've done a very good job of keeping up on the samples, and there's not a real lengthy turnaround time. But I hear that the people that are growing the ELS cotton this year in our area are pleased with the prices that they're seeing. So that's a good thing.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And I'm incredibly hopeful that our incoming president really will follow through with the brains of people like Elon Musk and others who are willing to think, saying, is there a better, faster, cheaper way where it's moral? Our world gets better, healthier, but we crash the cost, crash the size of government.
That's Arizona Representative David Schweikert on the floor of the House.
But you show charts like this, the Democrat solution always turns out being, well, the way we'll take care of health care is we're going to subsidize it more. How about if we embrace the technology that made it less expensive? The thing you blow into that tells you you have a virus that orders your antivirals. Do you know that technology exists? It's just illegal. Because we're allowing an algorithm to write a prescription. We can crash the price of healthcare. Remember, the ACA, Obamacare, was a finance bill. Who gets subsidized and who has to pay? The Republican alternative. It was better, actuarially it was better, but it was still a finance bill. Medicare for All is a finance bill. They're not discussions of what it takes to lower the cost of healthcare. My joint economic economist did something we thought was really risky, and it was shocking. We even had Democrats and Republicans who said, yeah, you're going the right way. Last March, we did a study. What do you think obesity in America over the next 10 years? Turns out we calculated it could be $9.1 trillion additional health care costs. Plus the fact our brothers and sisters are dying. This may be the fifth year in a row where prime-age males are dying younger. But the concept that making America healthier, it may mean having to do things that are hard. It may have reexamining the farm bill, what we do in nutrition support, how we help our brothers and sisters. But our brothers and sisters are dying. And also, it would be great fiscal policy, because it turns out obesity is the single biggest cost in government. If you had to come up, it's moral. Is that Republican or Democrat? I'm sure we'll make it partisan because someone will contribute to one side or the other and then we'll go to war over it. But the fact of it is there's actual solutions that are not hacking apart government, are raising everyone's taxes, but is changing how we do things. Right now, forgive me, when 31% of Medicare spending is just diabetes, why do we do this to ourselves? Why is it so hard to think disruptively, to think morally, to challenge the armies of lobbyists who are walking up and down our hallways? And remember, those lobbyists aren't always corporates. They're, you know, good government groups. They're societies that just want to be subsidized. They're bureaucrats. And basically looking at all of them and saying, what's more moral? Making people healthier or sticking more cash into the maintenance of your misery? Because the model right now is we spend a fortune maintaining your misery. Put the money in things that produce cures. We can't keep doing public policy by our feelings. We actually have to do it by a calculator and good quality economics. And it's how we will stay a free people. Because do you understand the dystopian life our world will be when we smash up against a debt crisis.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert, and this is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
There have been three major takeaways from our time here. And the first one is just the tremendous hospitality that's been shown. The second real takeaway is just that their desire to work with American farmers, how they understand that American farmers are really just the leaders in quality, the leaders in expertise, and the ability to build those relationships even further. And then the third one, the desire to advance agriculture in Morocco and across the entire continent.
Virginia State Ag Secretary Matthew Lohr on a recent trade mission to Morocco. Indiana State Ag Director is Don Lamb.
As I look at where we're at now with Morocco, I look at that past and that vision, and I think, okay, now we're at a new spot, and we need some more vision and some new vision. And when you think about one out of four people by 2050 going to be living on the African continent, we have a great reason to have vision for the future. And there's a huge opportunity for feed and for grains and for many other products from the U.S. They do want the American products.